Welcome to Stifel's Investment Strategy Brief, a monthly recap of the macroeconomic and market environment.
Well, greetings and welcome to the Investment Strategy Brief podcast. This is Michael O'Keefe, Stifel's Chief Investment Officer. In this episode, I want to get into really what's in focus as we make our way through mid-year 2024 and look out into the second half of the year. So a focus on the second half, if you will. And, you know, what I'd start with really is some of the optimism that's just been so quite present, so very present in the environment, really around artificial intelligence. So we've talked a lot about it, right? What is it? What is generative AI? This idea that we're seeing really early days of a transformation in the labor market and productivity and competition. And we've talked a little bit about an investment framework, you know, enablers of AI, innovators and disruptors. But really the optimism is sort of anchored in this idea that this is going to both improve productivity and allow for enhanced products. And the numbers, as we've talked about before, are, you know, in the $15 to $16 trillion range in terms of extra GDP growth between now and, let's say, 2030. So lots and lots of optimism out there. And, you know, as a result of that, moving into sort of the environment around the economy, you know, essentially we've seen economic growth come out better than expected. Again, a lot of optimism. We're sort of back to the trend growth line that was there before the pandemic. So that's good, sort of full recovery. And when we get into the issues of sort of interest rates and the Fed, you know, obviously inflation's in keen focus. And essentially what we've seen recently is an improvement, just 1 month's worth of improvement in the consumer price index, and I think a little bit more in terms of the producer price index. Anyway, long story short, these numbers coming down roughly around or below the Fed's 2% target for the month, or even roughly the last 3 months. And, you know, and what I would say is the Fed's happy to see that, but they want to see more, right? So inflation has improved a little bit. I will say that shelter has come down. That's things like rent and owner equivalence rent, but that really is a number that's been sticky and it hasn't come down as much as it needs to get the inflation back to the Fed's 2% target. So all this data is sort of in focus for folks. But at the end of the day, what the Fed has said is, look, we're not gonna cut anytime soon. We wanna see improved inflation results. We're happy with these most recent ones, but we wanna see more. There was some worry that the Fed was debating hiking rates further. I think that's kind of off the table. But what they've said is, look, we're going to wait a while. We want to see improving inflation, more evidence of that. And we're going to be data dependent. We're going to keep watching the data. We also got, for example, a forecast of you know, what's called the a summary of economic projections. So they poll all the officials at the Fed, and then they publish sort of the distribution of their views. And a lot of people focus on the median, like what's the average forecast. And there's basically a view that inflation is going to cool, but not back to the Fed's 2% target. There's a view that the economy is going to hold up pretty well, that unemployment's going to stay pretty good. And the thing that most are focused on is the idea that the Fed's now come back to the idea of just 0.25 cut by the end of the year. And so recall that the market started this year with a lot of optimism that we were going to see 5 or 6 cuts from the Fed. But as the reality has sunk in the first half of the year, essentially people realize, okay, maybe 1 to 2 late in the year is sort of the way futures are sort of pricing Fed movement. What does that mean in terms of interest rates? That means we're higher for longer. It means that essentially, when we parse the data, we look at current rates and the 10-year treasuries, you know, 4.2, 4.3, it's been bouncing around there. That's, you know, elevated compared to where we were during the pandemic and since the financial crisis, really. And then when we look at forward rates, so in the yield curve, you can infer what the market thinks the 10-year rate's going to be 10 years from now. You can infer the 10-year rate 20 years from now. That forward rate, all of them are above 4%. And so the idea of higher for longer in an environment where since the financial crisis, we've built up a lot of debt. So there's just a recognition that we have to watch for cracks with consumers, businesses, and of course our government. Now, as it comes to the consumer, we've been talking about a slowdown in the consumer and we're seeing little bits of evidence. Consumers in part been feeling good because of the job market. So for a while, a short while, but a while, there were two jobs for every unemployed person out there. So the sort of the power was with the worker more than the employer. And while we've seen some sort of softening of that, so I think we're down into, I don't know, maybe 1.3, 1.4 jobs for every unemployed person. The average is below one long term. So we still have a ways to go in terms of a softening of the labor market. And so as then as it relates to the consumer, one of the things we did this time around is to deepen our analysis of what I'll call the earnings assessment, right? Looking at how companies are talking about the environment. And basically what we're seeing is a number of companies. So think of companies like McDonald's, Pepsi, Citigroup, Starbucks, Amazon. These are companies where in their commentary, they're talking about the consumer having some headwinds or maybe lower income or maybe it's about being more exacting, like careful about what they're buying or what they're spending money on. Little glimpses and signals of a bit of a slowdown, especially as it relates to lower income consumers. So this is something we've been talking about. We've seen a slight softening of retail sales. We've seen sentiment below sort of neutral levels. We've seen consumer confidence below neutral levels. And we've seen a little bit of an uptick in auto and credit card loan delinquencies. So these are all little bits of data that we're watching really to kind of understand where we're headed with the economy. So recall that last year was a much better year than expected, GDP up 2.5%. This year, the forecast remains at about 2.4%, that consensus forecast. Now, the Fed just came out with their most recent projection. They say 2.1. And then some softening in 2025 for the consensus. So the consensus right now reads about 1.8. But again, our view, for what it's worth, is we're a little more extreme to think things are going to slow down. We're not calling for a recession, but we think this idea of a slowing consumer could kick in a little bit more firmly. And that's kind of what we're watching for. Now, I want to take a couple minutes and shift gears and and go deeper on a topic that we've been talking about a little bit, but we'll go deeper into between now and November, and that's elections, right? So to start, you know, we're in an environment where we're in a global election super cycle. So 40 nations having elections, it translates to about 40% of the world's population having the ability to go to the polls. And it's kind of tricky because, of course, every single situation, every single election is complicated in its own way. Local issues, local party structures, all that. But what we try to do is look for sort of common themes. We try to look for sort of structural similarity between there and the U.S. And really around two main things. What does this mean in terms of international trade and especially relations for the U.S. with these different countries and regions? But then number two, are we seeing big moves? Are we seeing big moves in one direction or another? And are there any things that we can kind of anticipate about our elections, given what we're seeing around the world? So I wanted to, in this episode, jump into a few more sort of details on this. The first is to say some of the key themes that we see unfolding, of course, relate to economic opportunity. This is candidates sort of focusing on the voters and how they can improve their situation in terms of a strengthening economy. That also sort of translates to and relates to protectionism. So this sort of overarching idea that the officials who want to be elected are going to take care of the local population. Then finally, as I mentioned, we were watching kind of the implications when it comes to these countries and regions having relationships around the world, especially between us and China. And so to jump into a few results, first, let's go to Mexico. So the left-leaning Claudia Sheinbaum won by a 30% margin, so a bit of a stronger shift to the left. And she's really supported by the current president, AMLO, who has had this platform called the Fourth Transformation. And so the idea with this is essentially to, you know, sort of improve the environment when it comes to what's going on with the economy, they, you know, kind of focus on, you know, taking care of corruption, taking care of people. This fourth transformation has been a big focus. And so people are sort of happy about that in terms of support there. Now, one subtle thing is, and it does relate a little bit to protectionism, is the U.S. has had many, many companies that are moving, you know, supply chain and production to Mexico, what has been termed nearshoring. So sort of offshore capabilities, but closer to your country, right? So Mexico is kind of a big player for that when it comes to the U.S. And I think the general view is that Sheinbaum's election is supportive of that. And in part, by the way, around border enforcement, the idea that Mexico will cooperate with the U.S. as there's an increased a desire to sort of tighten up the border between Mexico and the U.S. And so, again, that's sort of an important election. Next up would be India. So there we've seen a shift. It's sort of right-leaning, but a little bit of a shift towards the left. So Prime Minister Modi won a third term, but his party lost its majority in parliament. And really they've had some improvements in terms of the economy and all that, but essentially still unemployment and the sense of inequality remain key issues that have sort of softened support there. And, you know, when it comes to international relations, we've obviously had a strong relationship with India, but they also have a developing relationship with China. So they're trying to kind of appease both us and China. Now, finally, the EU. So the EU is interesting in the sense that we've seen sort of candidates that sit in the center kind of holding their seats, candidates on the far right gaining some seats, and then candidates like the Renew and Greens losing seats, about 41 seats in the parliament. And so what this is reflective of is a bit of a shift to the right. And when we dig into issues that are of concern to voters, two really jump out. One is really migration. So the migration of folks around the area migrating into the EU and the stresses that that creates for the local populations. And then as well, almost like this realization that the path to net zero is actually going to be pretty costly. So there's been pushback, if you will, on those two issues really through voter action. And, you know, just to kind of project out in terms of the implications for the U.S., you know, right now, I think in terms of where things stand, it really is too close to call when it comes to the presidency or the House or the Senate on where the power is going to fall. But given the polarity in our environment, the energy in our environment, some of the more emotional issues that we're all wrestling with, you could actually see a shift that could be dramatic, right? But be interesting to see in which direction. It's kind of hard to tell. And so, you know, there's been talk as one scenario of a flip where the presidency and the Senate go Republican and the House goes Democratic. But again, I think in all of these races, it's a little bit early and too close to call. Now, as it relates to issues that are in focus, I think some that are going to be affected by where the election falls would be trade policy, tax policy, immigration, the regulatory environment, and the environmental considerations. And then, honestly, a couple things that probably won't change as a result of the election outcome. One would be the deficit spending, but it seems like both parties are supportive of continued high fiscal deficit spending. And then a second, at least for the moment, is just a heavy sort of scrutiny on China. That's sort of a common theme between the parties. So again, we're seeing, you know, a lot of data and, you know, people can make arguments for things going to one party or another. We think it's still a little too early to make any kind of call like that. Now, shifting gears to the markets, starting with interest rates. Interest rates, as we've talked about before, are up just a little bit. From the beginning of the year, the 10-year sits has been bouncing around 4.2 to 4.3 recently, started the year at about 3.9. And so as it relates to yields on bonds, that means that segments of the bond market remain pretty attractive. I will say, too, that the volatility of the bond market, there's an index called the MOVE Index, sits at about, excuse me, in round numbers, 92, where it's averaged about 77 over the last 10 years. So just think of that as one sort of data point that is showing us that there's just a little bit more volatility in fixed income than we've seen in a while. And then speaking of volatility, if we switch over to the equity market, there's an index called the VIX index, which is sort of an implied market volatility measure for the S&P 500. And that's been declining since 2021 and here in 2023 and 2024. And for a while, there's another index called the dispersion index, which really kind of captures how different stocks are moving around, if you will, compared to one another. And that as well has been declining. But recently, and into 2024, while it's a volatile measure, that in general has been increasing. So think of it as, hey, when you look at the high-level index results, things feel stable and sort of muted when it comes to volatility. But actually, when you dig into the volatility of individual stocks relative to that, they're actually up a little bit. And so that's something that maybe can be sort of gut-wrenching to investors when they think everything's calm, but then individual positions they own move around a lot. That can be kind of destabilizing. So something that we're keeping an eye on and providing some counsel, if you will, to our advisors and clients on the topic. Now, the equity market itself has kept elevated. It keeps moving higher. It's been volatile a little bit, but moving higher, trading at a traditionally at a premium. But recall that we've talked about the strong earnings growth of these bigger tech-oriented companies, the Magnificent Seven, where really, when it comes to the price earnings ratios, that valuation, when we neutralize that those metrics for growth, essentially the market seems kind of even relative to between the Mag 7 and the rest of the market. So they're all kind of even and just a little bit richly valued compared to history. So that pattern that we've talked about where indices like the S&P 500, which is cap weighted and has a big concentration in those bigger tech oriented companies, has performed better than things like the equal weighted index or style indices like the value index or even small cap, which is basically flat for the year. And so, the bottom line is we're seeing lots of different movement, but we also have to be careful that these kinds of patterns do rotate. Things come into and out of favor. And, as we've discussed before, we're kind of setting up for a period where other things besides the Magnificent Seven ultimately influence market results. So we'll keep an eye on that. Anyway, as we look forward, I'll just mention that we're still focused extensively on the geopolitical environment and the risks associated with it. There's U.S.-China. There's basically worries about cyber attacks. There's things like, financial instability, higher rates and the challenges that that creates. And then, of course, the very unfortunate military conflicts around the world. So all things that we're keeping an eye on, even as we're here within the U.S., keeping an eye on the Fed and employment and the consumer and sentiment. That interplay between inflation and Fed policy and interest rates. So again, those are the things that are in focus. I'll close by just reiterating and inviting folks to check out stiefelinsights.com, a website that we maintain for you in terms of content like this and everything else that we produce. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll be back to you in July. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Stifel's Investment Strategy Brief. Be sure to subscribe wherever you're listening to automatically receive each month's podcast in your feed.